Good morning. We will start our meeting. And before we begin, we will do a roll call. Thank you.
Chair Brigger.
Here.
Vice Chair Del Carlo. Regent Batista. Here. Regent Boylan. Regent Goicoechea.
Present.
You have a quorum.
Thank you very much. We will, before we begin, we have our land acknowledgement. And so we'll take a moment to recognize that in Nevada we stand on the land of the Washishu Washo, Numu, Northern Paiute, Nui, Western Shoshone, and the Nuwu, Southern Paiute. We take a moment to recognize and honor their stewardship that continues into today. With this recognition, we state an intention to rightfully include their voice and respect them as the 27 sovereign tribal nations of Nevada. Are we not doing the pledge? I thought we always did. It's not on here. We're going to, Regent Batista, would you do the lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance? If not, I can do okay.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay, we will start with public comment. And for those that would like to call in and offer public comment, please dial 669-444-9171. The meeting ID is 933-5568-7402. And the passcode is 555555. Okay, is there any public comment at GBC? Gosh, could I speak today?
No public comment at this moment.
Thank you. Is there any public comment at the system office in Reno?
None in Reno.
Thank you. And I'm not seeing any public comment here in Las Vegas. Okay. And SCS, yes. Is there any comment on the phone?
No callers at this time, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Our first item, number 2, 2A, 2B, 2C, and let me turn my page here. D and E, we can take this if one motion, unless anyone has anything they need to hear separately. Seeing none, if I could have a motion on the consent items. There's only a few of us, so you either have to.
I'll make a motion to
approve. Okay. Okay, we have a motion for item 2A, B, C, D, and E. Do I have a second?
Second by Regent Goicoechea.
Thank you very much. You gentlemen are going to be it. Do we have a motion and a second? All those in favor signify by aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Sorry, I need to wait for that lapse there. And there's no abstentions because it's the three of us. Thank you very much. Item number three, communications with those charged with governance and financial statements. And we have the audit team here. If they'd like to come up, that would be fantastic. And if you'd like to introduce yourself and continue on, that'd be great.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you. Kurt Schlicker, audit engagement partner with Ide Bailey. Chair and members, thank you for having us here today to discuss the results of the system's financial audit for the year ended June 30, 2025. To start off, kind of to provide some context, what are we auditing? There's always kind of questions on, you know, what does the audit entail? Is it fraud? Is it internal controls? Is it, you know, what numbers are you looking at? So to clear some of that context, we're auditing the financial statements of the system. So said another way, that's your balance sheet or what's called the statement of net position, your income statement essentially for the system, and your statement of cash flows. What we do in the audit is management prepares those numbers, they present them to the public in their financial statements, and then we look at those balances, we audit those balances, and attempt to conclude in an opinion that they are fairly stated, or at least reasonable assurance that they're fairly stated. Reasonable assurance isn't absolute assurance, meaning we can't be 100% confident that every single transaction up there is represented correctly, because you guys have, you know, hundreds of thousands of transactions and we don't look at every single one. But we like to believe we get pretty close and that they can be relied upon. So as you can see up there, I just have for reference the system's statement of net position and the income statement for the system, as well as the cash flows. If you have questions on specific numbers, I'm happy to answer them at the end of the presentation and go through any questions you may have. But again, I just wanted to provide that context. So getting into the results, our independent auditor's report expressed an unmodified opinion this year. And even though that doesn't sound great, an unmodified opinion is the best opinion that we give. It means that management presented the information, we're reasonably assured that it's fairly stated, and we don't have any modifications, meaning a qualified opinion. So it's an, if you remember when you were a kid, it's called unmodified now. It used to be called unqualified. So again, the best opinion that you can receive. In addition to that, in an audit under government auditing standards, we also report on internal control matters. So our objective of the audit isn't to test the effectiveness of the system's internal control, but if any internal control matters come to our attention as part of performing our procedures in the audit, then we report those to governance. We'll get to that. We do have one matter to talk about towards the end of the presentation, and I'll give you some more details on that, but again, that's high level. We design our audit procedures, kind of incorporating internal controls, different risks. We focus on material balances on the balance sheet, the income statement, cash flows. We want to look at stuff that could impact the user. And what we mean by the users, people who are relying on your financial statements to make decisions. Okay, so we focus and look at those areas. Those areas of focus, as I mentioned, it's risk-based. And as part of our audit procedures, we identify what we in the audit world call significant risks. Now, I want to be clear on what I'm saying here. It's not significant risks of that somebody's necessarily committing fraud or anything like that. It means risks on balances that have a higher likelihood of being misstated. So estimates that are complex that we want to work through, or a couple of areas that standards require us to consider as a significant risk. So the significant risks that we identified for the 2025 audit is management override of internal controls, because it's always a risk that management could not follow internal controls. Improper revenue recognition, that's a risk that audit standards require us to consider, that an organization is improperly stating revenue for various reasons. Then we get into the estimates and some of the other valuation stuff. The system has a lot of alternative investments that are valued at a net asset value. So it's not necessarily, you can't go to Yahoo Finance and look up the value of an investment. There's a lot of valuation and other things that goes into that. That is what we consider to be a significant estimate. We also have pension and OPEB liabilities, which are actuarially determined. Again, significant estimates. And then this year, there was the implementation of a new GASB standard. That GASB standard was compensated absences. It changed the way that it required governments to evaluate paid time off. So it used to be you just had to value paid time off if it was going to be paid at termination, for sick time anyway, and then vacation time. And they changed that to now value leave that was going to be paid at termination or used during, you know, regular service. So estimation in there, lots of flow diagrams and other considerations. So again, a complex estimate that we considered a risk. So with those risks in mind and the material balances, we primarily focused on cash, investments, receivables, capital assets, long-term debt, payables, revenues, and expenses. And that was the majority of our procedures. If you looked at the system financial statements, you would have noticed a second column called the system-related organizations. What those really are, in specific government terms, they're called discretely presented component units. So those are organizations that are related to the system, and GASB has said you need to include them within the financial statements, within the reporting entity. But because they're a discretely presented component unit, we put them in a separate column, separate from the system itself and their financial numbers. So up there I have listed, it's primarily all the foundations for the most part. We audit some of those system-related organizations, the UNR Foundation, Wolfpack Athletic Association, UNLV Medicine, UNLV Alumni, UNLV Singapore Unlimited. The rest is audited by other auditors. So our report on internal controls essentially excludes everything that was audited by others because they did their work, they'll report their work. We're not taking responsibility for that. So I mentioned earlier that we did have one financial control matter to report. And so some of this dovetails into it, and I'll get into the specifics on the next slide. But as part of our audit, we identified a couple of adjusting journal entries, meaning we performed audit procedures. We identified something that didn't look right, brought it to the attention of management. They ultimately agreed, and they corrected the numbers. So those items were the recording of subscription-based information technology arrangements. That's a mouthful, I know, but it's think of it as an IT lease for $4.2 million. We had adjustments to correct direct loan revenue and expense of $8.8 million at NSU, and then a tuition discounting adjustment of $2 million at NSU. Now, the next item there in the bullet points that you can see, there's always a lot of questions that I get on past adjustments. What are past adjustments? They're items that we brought to the attention of management, and we said, hey, can you take a look at this? We agreed that they were not 100% accurate, but they were of a small enough nature that we said, do we think any user from a financial statement, big picture, financial statements have billions of dollars in them, so we're talking very small amounts in comparison to the billions of dollars on the financial statements. We don't think they're material. We don't think they would influence a user. Do you agree, management? Management says, yes, we also agree. We don't think this would influence a user. And so we pass on those adjustments because everybody believes them to be immaterial. So those past adjustments were $1.7 million of assets that were placed in service in the current year that should have been placed in service in prior years at NSU. The implementation of that compensated absences GASB account, GASB requires new principles to be adopted as a restatement. But since that restatement was only $3.7 million out of, again, billions of dollars on the balance sheet, everybody agreed that it was immaterial to post to beginning balances. There's some fiduciary activity system-wide that the system has that isn't broken out and separately accounted for $2.5 million. And then in the system-related organizations, namely the UNR and UNLV Foundation, there were some adjustments to fair value that were passed on for $3.6 million. So again, items that we believed and management believed were immaterial to the users, again, thinking from a financial statement perspective, not necessarily an operations perspective. As I mentioned, we did have one finding. When we report findings, we report them in two severities. One is a material weakness. That is where we believe there was a breakdown in internal controls that led to a material misstatement of the financial statements. And then we have a significant deficiency, which is less severe than a material weakness, even though it sounds worse. I know significant deficiency sounds really bad, but it's actually less severe than a material weakness. And that's usually a combination of smaller items that are still wrong. They didn't lead to a material misstatement, but we believed they were still important enough to bring to the attention of governance. We did report one finding this year, 2025-001, with respect to some recording of balances at NSU. From the previous slide, we had those two journal entries at NSU for the tuition eliminations, the construction progress transfers, which was a past adjustment, and the discounting of the tuition and the classification of that. So the combination of those three items all at one entity, even though they were individually smaller than what we would consider a material weakness, they kind of aggregated to where we reported as a significant deficiency. How did the system do compared to prior year? That's usually a pretty relevant question. What was corrected? Did we do a good job of correcting, or did management do a good job of correcting findings? So I want to make a couple of things clear. We're only presenting the financial statement audit today because the single audit is not yet completed, and it's not because anybody's just, sitting back at home not working hard on it. The OMB compliance supplement hasn't been issued yet. That's released by the administration every single year. It's the audit program for the auditors. We have to follow that. Has not been released for June 30, 2025. There's no ETA on its release. And the AICPA has provided guidance to member firms that essentially prohibiting them from issuing a single audit because the compliance supplement has not yet been issued. So there's some pendings up there, and that's because, we haven't completed the single audit procedures to report on that yet. Last year had a number of financial statement findings. Essentially, all of the financial statement findings presented in the prior year were corrected, and then any of the single audit matters have been essentially deferred until we report on it for the conclusion of those procedures. So I know I kept it hopefully relatively brief and didn't overwhelm anybody, but I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Are there any questions from the committee to start with? Seeing none, since the board's sitting here, is there anything that you have a question on? Otherwise, we would move forward to the motion really is they're looking for approval for the NG financial statements for the year ending June 30th, 2025. That will include a report on communication with those charged with governance from the system. So if everybody's good. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Regent Carvalho.
Thank you, Chair Breaker. I'm curious where you... I'm just trying to get everything together in my head. The discretely presented component units list that you have here. Mm-hmm. How did you compose that list? Was it through conversations with NSHE staff that they gave you these entities as the component units?
Thank you, Regent Carvalho. Kurt Schlicker with Ide Bailey for the record. Management every single year looks at organizations that are related to the system in some fashion, and there's a set of standards that are published by the Governmental Accounting Standards Board, so GASB, that dictates which organizations have to be included in the system and which are not. We review that in detail. We ask the system to review that every single year. They provide us a list of what they've identified. We look for completeness of that list to make sure they identified everything, and we ultimately hopefully agree with their conclusions. But yes, so it's a two-way street there.
I would assume that that we should also see these component units presented in essentially the foundation's reports that are coming later. So I see some discrepancies between this list and what's there, and also missing on both. And so I don't know if this is the right time to discuss that, but I just do have some concerns about whether this is a complete list and whether what the foundations are reporting to us on is also complete.
Kurt Schlicker with Ide Bailey for the record. I can answer some of that. The foundations do receive separate audits, but they don't. Some of them don't follow the same government auditing standards. Some of them report under FASB, which is the Financial Accounting Standards Board, so they're more of a nonprofit or accounting metric versus the governmental accounting metric. Sometimes they have different nomenclature in the line items, and so the system, which is appropriate under GASB, will reclassify some of their balances, some of their naming conventions to kind of get more similar with how the system reports its balances. So that's not misleading to a user to have a bunch of odd names out there. So you will see some discrepancies in naming and where some things are classified. We reconcile everything that's presented in the discretely presented component unit column or the system-related organization to those standalone audits within a material variance level. Now, if there's foundations that haven't been reported that we're not aware of that are material that that management has not brought to our attention and we didn't see it because we just didn't see a transaction that evidenced that, that would be something we would, you know, have to look at. There are organizations that are small and immaterial that are essentially so small that they're not included in the system related organizations, but we would have to work with management on any of those specific concerns. I just don't have a list in front of me to be able to compare those decisions.
Okay. I guess where I see some gaps, I'll talk about that with the specific institutions when their foundations present. So that I understand what you're saying there. I do wonder also, and I know that the UNLV Rebel Soccer Foundation is a very small foundation in terms of percentage of assets, but there were some significant deficiencies in their external audit as well, and those aren't presented here, and I don't know if there's a reason for that, and I'd like to give you that opportunity.
Yeah, Kurt Schlicker with Hyde Bailey for the record. We didn't audit the Rebel Soccer Foundation. That was done by other auditors, and so we allow those other auditors to take responsibility for their work and communicate those findings. If I don't want to get too technical, but auditors sometimes take responsibility for other auditors' work and sometimes we don't. In this particular engagement, and it's been historical this way, we don't take responsibility for the work that other audit firms perform over the system-related organizations. We let them report and stand on their own work.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other comments or questions?
Yeah.
Regent Brooks.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate that, Regent Brooks, for the record. The question is actually for our Chief Financial Officer, and it has to do with the reporting process. And what I'm wondering is, because there seems to be discrepancies in the audit reporting process, in previous conversations the board has had specific to reporting and trying to make sure that everything is very similar so that things are more uniformed. Is there a From your perspective, is there a way to tighten some of this up a little bit so that things are more uniformed in terms of the audit reports?
Chris Fatone for the record. Thank you for the question, Regent Brooks. If I'm just to make sure I'm actually clearly understanding the question, what I see as a discrepancy is that you have foundations that are included in the component unit reporting in the system's audited financial statement. Not all of those foundations are separately listed and coming forward and reporting this afternoon in those foundation committee, the foundation annual reports. All of these have been subject to, all of the foundations that are included in the component unit reporting have been subject to the same policy requirements require a balancing of audits versus reviews in each cycle. And they do provide their common reporting to the campuses, often through their foundations. So the separate sport foundations that you see listed report through the campus primary foundation. So the Rebel Soccer Foundation reports through the UNLV Foundation, and that's why those don't come forward separately in the reports that you receive on the board calendar later today.
Thank you. I think that answered part of the question. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Okay. If there's no other questions, then we would move on to a motion. And I believe you did state it before, so. So we have a motion on the floor. Do we have a second? And it would be to accept this report in regards to the financial statements for the year ending in June 30th, 2025. And we've all read that. Pardon me?
You've got a second, I believe.
Okay, thank you very much. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. Thank you for your report. Item number four is communications with those charged with governance and financial statements, University of Nevada, Las Vegas Medicine, Inc., and they will present the approval for the UNLV Medicine, Inc. financial statements for the year ending in June 30th, 2025. Additionally, this will include a report on communications with those charged with governance for the UNLV Medicine, Inc. This is report on communications signed with requirements for compliance with the professional standards for CPA firms. And I believe that this partner, Renee Gravelin, is on Zoom. Okay, if you'd like to go
That's
ahead.
Correct.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead. The floor is yours.
Thank you. For the record, Renee Gravelin with Ide Bailey. Are the slides going to be brought up there? There we go. Thank you very much. So this is one of the component units that Kurt mentioned in his presentation. And going through a similar piece, so this is just UNLV Medicine doing business as UNLV Health. Going to the next slide, again, as Kurt mentioned, what is the financial statement audit? These would be the same type of items, the statement of net position, statement of revenues, expenses, and changes in net position, cash flows, and then the footnotes, but just for UNLV Health. The report on the audit of the financial statements, we concluded that the financial statements present fairly, as well as it delineates what management's responsibilities are, which are the preparation of the financial statements, the design, implementation, and maintenance of internal control. There's also a paragraph that sometimes trips boards up or governance up because it does mention the term going concern. What this is basically management is to continually do an analysis on whether or not that is the case. And in this case, it's not a going concern opinion, meaning that everybody's concluded we're not sure. It's just that there has to be this evaluation. We also talk about on the next slide, the required supplementary information, which is the MD&A. So if we go to the next slide. Oh, the auditor's responsibility, thank you. That ours is much more detailed out. So we obtain reasonable assurance. As Kurt mentioned, this is a high level of assurance, but not absolute. We do exercise professional judgment and professional skepticism. We do identify those risks, which we'll be talking about in just a moment. They're similar to what Kurt presented, but because of the healthcare nature of UNLV Health, there are some different ones. We do obtain that understanding of internal control. And then we look at the accounting policies to make sure that they're reasonable as well as the reasonableness of significant estimates. And then we conclude on that evaluation on the substantial doubt, whether there isn't any. Again, this is not a going concern opinion. So if we go to the next slide, there is required supplemental information. And in this case, it's the management discussion and analysis. There is a new standard that will be implemented next year regarding, and part of it does address management's discussion and analysis. And part of the reason for issuing that is each of the MD&As were looking identical to each other and really weren't necessarily giving the information that Government Accounting Standards Board wanted. However, I will say the MD&A that we refer to this as, that's provided by management of UNLV Health, is very robust, has some graphs, includes a lot of discussion on not just something increased or decreased, but why it increased or decreased. So I would say, there should be minimal changes to the MD&A that's been provided historically. The other reporting required by government auditing standards, since we do that, again, as in the ENSHE report, there is the internal control over financial reporting and other matters opinion that is also done as part of the audit. The next slide discusses the areas of focus. And again, we look at those balances that could be material to the user, as Kurt defined and mentioned, that would be balances where if there was a misstatement, a user of the financial, whether it's governance, whether it's a lending institution or whomever, would maybe come to a different conclusion had the misstatement been corrected. The significant risks, whether due to error or fraud, that we identified, again, significant risks is an audit concept, so not necessarily an area where there's unusual risk for the type of organization that UNLV Health is. It just really is kind of the roadmap of what we look at during the audit. Management override of controls, that is a significant risk in every audit. Improper revenue recognition, there is a rebuttable presumption this is a significant risk in the audit unless you explain otherwise, and that generally doesn't happen. We look at allowances for contractual adjustments and bad debt expense, which is unique to the healthcare area. So a contractual adjustment would be the difference between what is billed and what is collected from third-party payers such as Medicare, Medicaid, et cetera, that you just can't collect. So there's that piece you're not going to collect. We also look at the related party balances and transactions. Again, by definition, those tend to have higher risk, as well as a reimbursement for healthcare, this upper payment limit, and the MCO, which is the Medicaid supplemental payment program. This is a relatively new program, so there's still some estimates that are going along with that. So that is why those were the areas that were areas of focus and significant risk. The next slide talks about the standard implementation this year, the compensated absences. With the compensated absences that UNLV Health had, there was minimal implication for this particular standard at the UNLV Health level. And that really related to a split between current and non-current liabilities for those compensated absences. But in total, the calculation really didn't change. There was a new standard that was also effective. However, it's a very limited scope standard. And so only if there are concentrations and constraints identified would this be reported. Generally, the expectation is you wouldn't have those. And UNLV Health did not, in fact, have those. The next couple of slides go through some more financial information for UNLV Health. The operating revenues, as you can see, the largest one is obviously the net patient service revenue. This number would be net of those contractual adjustments and bad debts that I referred to. So this is an area we spend a lot of time with. It's very consistent. It has decreased from the previous year, but some of that is because of that UPL and MCO supplemental program, and I'll talk about that just here in a moment. The net contract revenue is about the same as last year, about a 1% change, as well as other revenue. So total revenue for the system this year, UNLV Health was about $82.3 million compared to $83.7 million last year. So again, looks like a decrease of about $1.3 million, but we'll talk about why that really wasn't quite the case. It had to do with that UPL. The next slide shows the revenue by payer, and it's very important to understand that 45% there, that's Medicaid, and that really is what's driving that UPL and MCO supplemental payment. That's why UNLV Health does get that additional reimbursement from the state of Nevada, because there is such a high concentration of Medicaid. Last year, actually, for fiscal year 24, that Medicaid amount was about 50%. The other categories have stayed about the same. Medicare has increased a little bit, as well as commercial, but then self-pay and the other government agencies have remained consistent. The next slide is really the key slide, I think, in this presentation, and it's talking about the upper payment limit and MCO supplemental payment program. So what happens with that? You can see that $3.7 million that's in the brackets. What that is basically a fee that is paid into Nevada Medicaid. And then the federal government matches 50% of that. So then there's this pool of money that the state has that gets redistributed to healthcare facilities based on their amount of Medicaid volumes that they have. So you can see there was $9.9 million of revenue that was recorded or amounts that were received from the state of Nevada because of that 45% Medicaid that you had. In fiscal year 24, because this program was very new at the end of fiscal year 23, it was not possible for management to estimate how much they were going to be receiving or even how much they were going to be paying in. So then what happened in fiscal year 24 is they ended up recording six quarters of both the amount earned as well as the payment, rather than four, just because it was not possible to estimate that in fiscal year 23. So part of that related to fiscal year 23. So last year's revenue that was recorded, so that 9.9 million you see for this year, that was about 15.3 million last year. So that was a decrease of almost 5.4 million in that revenue. So even though it looks like total revenue decreased this year, it was because of some of that being in fiscal year 24 that really related to 23. Okay. Not unusual. This happens quite often when either the supplemental payment program changes or it's new, or there's different parameters going around. Right now, with some of the things going in Washington, D.C., there's several that aren't sure if they're even going to match it. So they're kind of on hold. So just to note that. The next slide shows the operating expenses of UNLV Health. Again, pretty consistent with the previous year. Expenses increased in total about 4.6, 4.7 million. Part of it is a switch. There were quite a few open positions in fiscal year 24. So now in fiscal year 23, you'll see this jump in the number or the amount of salaries and wages if you do a comparison. But that was because there were additional employees that were hired rather than using purchased contracted services for that. Contract services are much more expensive. The academic support, that 3.7 million, again, that was that fee that's paid to participate in the upper payment limit. That did decrease again because of the six quarters versus in 24 versus the four in 2025. The next several slides go through the related party activity. Most of it's with KSOM. A lot of this is fairly consistent. Some decreases in the due to affiliates, that is the amount payable. And then when we look down, physician salaries have increased as well as the GME support is new. So last year, that number for total expenses to KSOM was 29.5 million compared to 32.5 million. This is an area, again, because of the significant risk considered with related party transactions that we do spend quite a bit of our time. The next slide shows the balance sheet impact. There are several leases between KSOM and UNLV Health. There was an increase in this because of the Tenaya lease that occurred that was finalized here in fiscal year 25. So it increased both the revenue and expense right between 4.6 and $5.5 million. The next slide is with UNLV. A lot less activity between UNLV Health and UNLV. There's a small receivable that is due. There's some grants and the services at the UNLV Student Clinic. And then also there's one, some leases and a IT lease is what we call that, sometimes referred to as Civitas. Now, as far as those findings on the next slide, as Kurt indicated, there are two tiers. We either have that material weakness, which is there's a reasonable possibility a material misstatement will not be prevented or detected and corrected. Significant deficiency is less in scope, but important enough to merit attention. On the next slide, you will see that the financial statement results, the audit results, in bold there, we did not identify any deficiencies in internal control that we consider to be a material weakness at UNLV Health. And there were no adjustments as part of our audit. The next slide is just two real quick comments on some standards implementations that will be effective next year. The financial reporting model we talked about. GASB 103, which does talk about that MD&A, but there are the clarification between operating and non-operating items, the subsidies is a major item for healthcare organizations in particular. That upper payment limit and Medicaid supplemental program. Right now, there's a lot of discussion on whether is that an operating, which is where it's currently residing, or is a non-operating item. So there is supposed to be, there's an implementation guide coming out, and this is supposed to be specifically addressed in there. So really hoping that the conclusion is that is an operating item and not a non-operating item. And then GASB 104 has very minimal. It's just going to require kind of some roll-up of the property and equipment or capital assets as well as leases and the IT leases. We want to thank the staff at UNLV Health on the next slide. They were very helpful, very professional and cooperative, very attentive to our request. Definitely can tell it was the second year through the audit. We had the exact same team. We were very fortunate in that regard from the iBailey side, so that it helped facilitate getting the audit done with a minimal of chaos, if you will. So are there any questions on the UNLV Health?
Okay, thank you. I will ask if there are. Does the committee have any questions? There is. I'm not hearing any questions, and I guess we'd want to make sure that everyone that's involved in this for the 2026 would be very aware of the new structures and information that's out there. That would be very important. Any questions since you all are here today on this? Okay, I would open it up for a motion. And it would be in regards to accepting the presentation and that there were no material problems.
I will make a motion to accept.
Okay. We have a second?
I will second the motion. Regent Goykechea.
Thank you very much. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by aye. Aye. Any opposed? Oh, sorry. Gosh, I forget about the seconds there. Any against the motion? And there is none because there's the three of us. All right, we will thank you for your presentation. We appreciate that. And we will move on to item number 5, Intercollegiate Athletics, UNLV. Chief Internal Auditor Lauren Tripp will present for approval the report and institutional response to UNLV Intercollegiate Athletics audit for the period of July 1st, 23 through March 31st, 2025. The committee will discuss the audit findings and recommendations and may recommend specific actions to the Board of Regents and or the Chancellor to address the findings and recommendations. Ms. Tripp.
Thank you, Chair Brecker. For the record, Lauren Tripp, Chief Internal Auditor. In the audit summary document, there's a table of audit reports that are being presented today. This also included some follow-up reports, which were approved earlier in the meeting. And as always, I just want to say thank you to the institutions and offices with reports that are being presented today. This leads into the first audit report, UNLV Intercollegiate Athletics. Before I go into more detail related to the report, I want to once again thank UNLV Athletics staff for their assistance throughout this process. I also wanted to give a special thank you to Elise Winkowski, Interim VP for Business Affairs and CFO. I've been here for over 13 years now, and I know we had three rather large audits all going on at UNLV at the same time, which is pretty rare. Knowing there were some questions brought up at meetings over the past year, we just wanted to express our appreciation for being a driver in transparency to address those questions that were brought up, so thank you. During prior board meetings, there has been some discussion related to budget, expenses, athletics. When we perform an audit, we provide independent assurance over internal control processes, assess whether operations are operating effectively. We're here to help organization or to make sure that they are operating effectively to help achieve the organization's goals. So are things running the way they should be? Are there some weaknesses, breakdowns identified? If so, the big why. Why did those things happen? And most importantly, what can we do to help address those areas and improve them? We performed a limited scope audit, enabling us to dive deeper, if you will, and focus on expenditures, especially surrounding bowl games. We reviewed P-card processes and transactions, along with other operational processes. In regard to the audit findings noted, strengthening controls related to team travel, hosting, other athletics-related expenditures, compliance with purchasing card requirements. This also included timely verification approvals and implementing stronger controls related to the budgeting process. Additionally, something worth mentioning, as noted in the institution response, which is under the scope area of our audit report, the reporting structure changed during our audit where the ICA business office now reports directly to the interim VP for Business Affairs CFO. We do believe this will help with some of the challenges that were encountered during our audit period and help with more communication, collaboration to better align with NCHE and UNLV policies and procedures moving forward. Thank you.
I will open it up to the committee. Seeing no comments or questions from the committee, is there from the full board, anything that you would like to ask? Regent Brooks.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate that. Regent Brooks, for the record. I don't know if this would specifically, I think this is more of a UNOV question. Can you share with us how the transition is going in terms of moving business affairs from the athletic department into more a more centralized location at UNOV?
Thank you, Regent Brooks, for the question. Chris Heavey, interim president of UNLV, for the record. First, I'd like to just start out by thanking Lauren Tripp, chief auditor from NSHE, and the whole audit office. From my vantage point, this audit is very helpful to us in identifying specific weaknesses that have existed previously in the controls that have been in place to support the compliance of athletics. And as a result of looking at the report and thinking about its implications, I did make the decision to change the reporting structure of that office effective September 1st. That is a work in progress that I think is going to, as Ms. Tripp suggested, pay significant dividends going forward so that we don't come forward again with an audit report that has this level of findings in place. It is a complicated integration of the prior kind of athletics procedures into standard NSHE and UNLV policies and procedures. And so I would still characterize it as a work in progress, but I have high confidence that in the coming months that we will get to a place where we feel highly confident in the compliance of the athletics activities with the standard business processes of the university.
Thank you, President Heavey. In the report, there was specific to P cards. There was some. It seemed there's some discrepancies in terms of a significant spend of about $600,000 that's still trying to be reconciled. Can you share with us some of the steps that have been taken to clear some of this up so that things like this don't happen again in the future?
Yeah, thank you for the question, Regent Brooks. Chris Heavey, interim president of UNLV, for the record. Basically, I would say the summary of it is we're completely changing the way that we handle the reconciliation of P cards on a going forward basis based on the concerns that have been identified. We have essentially had to kind of close the books on some of these prior P card transactions for which there was not sufficient records to determine the extent to which they were fully in line with our procedures. And sort of going back to Ms. Tripp's comment that the value of this is mostly prospective and making sure that we're never in this situation again. And so on behalf of the institution, I'll apologize that we were not able to ever essentially run some of those things to ground so that we could assure the board of full compliance with our own rules. But we'll say that we have completely revamped the processes for making sure this never happens again, and that CFO Bunkowski is working actively with the athletics team to make sure that we are now approving, reconciling these on an ongoing basis rather than ever allowing there to be a large accumulation of unreconciled P card transactions.
Thank you. And is it would it be fair to say, President Heavey, that when you came in as the interim president, recognizing the issues that were taking place from a financial perspective on the campus, that there were some personnel changes that you felt you needed to make to ensure the stability of how things move on campus?
Chris Heavey, interim
president. Chair Brager, I'm just going to jump in just to caution the committee. I mean, this is the topic for open meeting law purposes is fairly narrow. It's this limited audit that relates to P card transactions and certain controls. So I think some questions related to that is certainly appropriate, but we can only go so far within this topic item.
Thank you. And I think what I would suggest, if you don't mind, Regent Brooks, is that maybe that would be a new business item to ask for any more detailed information that's out of the scope of this. Whatever you think, I'm not limiting what you can say, but I'm just going we're doing.
I appreciate that, Chair. Thank you. And I appreciate the latitude and certainly appreciate counsel's advice. I think from my perspective, what I'm interested in is We understand how we got here. I'm interested in where the university sits in rectifying some of this. So I think it's important that while we talk about the significant issues that have taken place from a financial perspective specific to the audit report, that we also understand some of the things that have been done in terms of positive processes to move things forward.
Interim President Chris Heavey for the record, and I'll say, in sort of 30,000 foot level, I recognize the tremendous contrast between the audit that was presented in the previous item and this audit in terms of level of concerns identified. And we take this audit very seriously and consider it very helpful and are making sure on a going forward basis we have the team in place to be compliant in a way that we are not ever faced with a report like this again.
Thank you, President Heavey. I appreciate your comments on this. Thank you, Chair.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Regent Brown, for the record. So when I was looking through some of this, I actually would just like some clarification on when it says that we'll look at the 2023 bowl game. So they had a $400,000 deficit against a $550,000 budget. I understand all the words. I just don't understand how that works. So when there's a budget, how is the budget determined? And then how do we, at the end up having a deficit?
Thank you. Chris Heavey, Interim President of UNLV, for the record. Essentially, that is evidence that the spend authority of the budget did not actually limit the expenditures. And that is, for example, as we referred to on a going forward basis, one of the conversations that CFO Bunkowski and I are having to make sure that we are getting a clear understanding in advance of what kinds of expenditures will be involved in every activity and aligning the expenditures with the budget prospectively. So, essentially it means that budget did not limit the amount that could be spent. And obviously, the deficit shows that more was spent than was budgeted. And now, on a going forward basis, we're making sure that we get a clear understanding with the Division of Athletics of what level of expenditure will be allowable and holding to the budget and evaluating that on a much more real-time basis so that we aren't looking at these things, many months or sometimes even years after the fact, wondering what happened.
And I appreciate that, and I realize, obviously, athletics is changing very quickly. We're having a lot of influx, whether it's coaches, whether it's, all the above, right? We know that the landscape is changing. I am curious, just to dig in a little deeper on the budget side, if a budget is determined, and in this case we'll use the bowl game since those are the hard numbers that we have. We didn't have numbers for 2024 bowl game. The $550,000, is that money in commitments or is that money hard money? Like that money's in the bank.
Chris Heavey, Interim President for the record. So when we get an invite to a bowl, we learn how much revenue we'll realize from participating in that. And I think the budget was basically set based on the revenue that would be realized. But as you noted, the actual expenses were substantially above the revenue that came in related to that event. And so, in talking with AD Harper, it is the case that oftentimes I think the situation that we're looking at here is not necessarily unique in college athletics, where participation in bowl games may actually cost more than the revenue generated by the bowl game. And so we'll just need to evaluate that carefully to see what we can and can't afford on that. And this all obviously fits within the broader picture of the amount of institutional support that's needed to be given to athletics in order to sustain our competitiveness. And that is an ongoing conversation that AD Harper and I and CFO Bunkowski and I are having on an ongoing basis.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. And you've heard me say it in meetings that we recognize sports across the board is a loss leader for an institution. We do recognize that. And okay, so I guess that's just good information for us. If it's budgeted, that's what's expected to be paid out for participating in a bowl game. And then obviously in this one example, the actual expenditures exceeded that by a significant amount. We don't have a number in 2024. Did things change in how the allotted money that was supposed to be given, was that not shared with UNLV? Is that why we don't have like a finalized budget to lean on?
Chris Heavey, interim president, for the record, I don't actually know the answer to that question, but what I would say is that I think the past practice was that the budget was just aligned with the revenue. And going forward, we understand that we need to budget more carefully than just saying how much are we going to take in for this, to actually evaluate what is it going to cost us from a participation perspective. And so now the budget needs to be more realistic to what all of the costs are that will be involved potentially, which is not just simply the revenue that we're going to receive. I could ask, I'm not sure exactly why we don't have that figure for 2024, but I am aware that in 2024 we also spent more than the revenue that was realized from participating in that ball game.
Yeah, I mean...
And I apologize, Regent Brown. And Chair Brager, just again remind the committee, this isn't a budget agenda item. I think, as you pointed out, as it relates to expenditures in the audit itself, I think is certainly within the scope of this agenda item. But to go beyond, it's not a general budget discussion. Just caution.
Yeah, and I do appreciate that. I think I was pointing out the fact that we can see a deficit in 23. We can't actually see that deficit in 24 because the numbers weren't shared, right? And if we're talking about a year over year, and this is not a two-year problem, right? This is a year this has been a problem that's been stacked year over year. We actually can't look at, that's where I was getting at, right? Like if we could get those numbers and we could see, then this committee and the rest of the, you know, well, there's only three of you, so the other 10 can, you know, actually take a real look at what the audit should look like, right? And that was my point, is that I can't actually see. We know that there was more money spent than was taken in. We also know that there were, you know, if you dig in a little deeper on, you know, improper documentations and coding and, you know, and then we don't even have the number to ask, you know, I can't ask follow-up questions for all of that. It sounds like you guys are, you know, this audit brought to light some stuff and then there's going to be some changes. But it also is kind of worrying because, you know, we look at the holistic, you know, relationship with money, and obviously there's different buckets, different ways that money is spent. And in one area, if it's saying that things are miscalculated, improper ledgers, you know, compliance was out, it kind of sounds like it was kind of the wild, wild west in one section. And, you know, that is, and then we get to these deficits on the overall budget. So, you know, and thank you, you know, Nielsen, but I just am just trying to, we could really use the approved budget and shared with that in the future, just so we can see a year over year. And then hopefully, you know, since we are bowl eligible, UNLV is bowl eligible, hopefully that budget is already taken into account so we don't have a third year in a row repeat.
Chris Heavey, for the record. Yeah, just to summarize, I definitely, you know, again, want to thank the NSHE internal audit of saying that we had severe material weaknesses in our internal controls that we are actively working to address and have made substantial progress.
And I appreciate that. What I am going to suggest once again, I believe that we need to have an actual agenda item in new business to have all that information brought forward and give the institution the ability to get us what we need. So I'm going to move forward on this, and we have a motion on the floor and a second. It's not that I don't want to hear from anyone, but I don't want to go out of the scope of that, and I think this is bigger than what we're hearing today. So I'm going to move us forward. So the motion is on the floor. I can't remember if we voted after all that discussion, but I thought that, did you make a motion? I apologize. We're on item number 5, and we would be making, if chosen, to make a motion for approval in regards to the report and institutional response to the UNLV Intercollegiate Athletics audit for the period of July 1, 2023 through March 31st, 2025, and the findings and recommendations may recommend specific action. This is where, if you felt from what you're hearing or whomever makes the motion, if you wanted to ask for more information, you could do it in your motion to come back, I would think, in new business, correct?
Chris Nielsen, for the record, yes, Chair Brager. I think that for motion purposes, I think approval, if there's a desire to approve the report for the UNLV Intercollegiate Athletics Audit for the period July 1, 2023 through March 31st, 2025 would be appropriate. And then I think separately, if there's any members of the committee have a desire to bring right. back this item and with expanded criteria or to include, certain budget items, I think that's the appropriate place.
Okay, thank you. That's what I felt was proper. So go ahead if you want. Or
yeah, I'm not very good with numbers.
So it'd be item number 5. And it would be a motion to accept the presentation by Chief Internal Auditor Lauren Tripp and for the institutional response for audit period July 1, 2023 through March 31st, 2025.
I'll make the motion.
Madam Chair, Regent Goycalchea.
Yes,
I would make that motion to accept the audit report and the report of the auditor. And also, clearly, the audit report is what it is, but there clearly are some budget issues we need to address, and more information would be needed on that.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor, please state by aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, we are going to move on to item number 6, and hopefully the rest of that will be addressed in new business. Item number 6, facilities contract NSU. I'm going to share that Chief Internal Auditor Lauren Tripp will present for the approval the report and institutional response to the NSU facilities contract audit for the period of July 1st, 2022 through March 31st, 2025. The committee will discuss the audit findings and recommendations and may recommend specific action to the Board of Regents and or Chancellor to address the findings and recommendations.
Thank you, Chair Brager. For the record, Chief Internal Auditor Lauren Tripp. This next audit report is for the NSU facilities contract. Facilities maintenance services are outsourced at this institution. This was actually a requested audit from the former business officer out at NSU to take a look at this contract and see if it was operating as intended. The team noted a few suggestions for improvement and improving clarification on contracts related to out-of-scope projects and allowable overhead, along with strengthening controls and processes over purchasing policies and requirements. Thank you.
Thank you. And what I will state is we're all we are doing, and I think everyone knows this, I think if there's anything outside of the scope and someone's not happy with, I'm not saying don't speak, but I do think it's an agenda item so we can get deep into whatever might be if, this is an if there is anything that anyone felt in looking at this agenda item that they wanted to see further. So I will turn it over to the committee to see if there are any questions in regards to the report from July 1st, 2022 to March 31st, 2025. We all did have the information, and I will presume that it was looked at. So anything from the committee before I go to the full board? Nothing from the committee? Anything from the full board? Ms. Brown, Regent Brown.
You should just put me on your committee. I did want to, looking through it, there were things like administrative fees that were added, even though contractually it said that wasn't allowed. That's just the big thing that kind of stood out to me. I have plenty of grants that have like the de minimis and so when I looked at this, what happened to that, is that process being rectified and like moving forward? Do we have controls in place to make sure that people are reading the contracts well? I'm just curious about that because it said that I think it was 38 cases where the violation happened. So
thank you for that question. Amber Lopez Lassiter, Acting President, Nevada State University. Absolutely. And I wanted thank Ms. Tripp and her team for the very critical information that was provided through this audit. Certainly, we want to ensure compliance, and our CFO and the team are taking corrective action.
Yeah, along that same vein, I'll just point out, overtime billing, no clarity on what falls outside of contract scope, missing supportive documentation, and there was something about contractors being awarded instead of actually going through like approved vendors. So it's not just one thing, and I'm glad an audit always shines light, and hopefully there's corrective action. But this feels like quite a loosey-goosey way of handling, real money. So I'm just curious what the plan is to correct some of the stuff.
Yeah. So I know one of the actions that have been taken has been the refresher course with purchasing through UNLV. And then our interim CFO will work with our AVP of infrastructure to ensure that every single item that was identified through this audit is addressed, and that we are deliberate to make sure that we're in tip-top shape. Thank you.
Thank you.
If there's no other comments or questions, I will ask for a motion.
Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
Regent Gorgachev, for the record, I would make that motion. But again, I think that's, we're missing something here. That's the reason for audits. And clearly, when those recommendations from the audit team and or the corrective actions, then the issue becomes if we don't follow those or if they aren't corrected, that's when we have to really address this. I mean, that's the purpose of the audit in my mind, is to point these out. But I would make that motion that we accept the audit report, because again, that's what it's all about. And if we fail to move forward and correct it, then that's when it becomes an issue. Thank you.
Thank you for your motion.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second in regards to item number 6. All those in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? None. The motion passes. The next item is for information only. That'd be item number 7, internal audit compliance and or Title IX updates. Ms. Tripp.
This button hates me, sorry. Thank you, Chair Breaker. Lauren Tripp, Chief Internal Auditor. So this has been a standing item where we can provide some departmental updates, more importantly, have a placeholder to discuss anything related to risk. In the past, it's been used to talk about financial aid-related findings, risk assessment methodologies, work the department is doing towards accomplishing board initiatives. Before I jump into the bulk of this discussion, which will be very heavy on the incident management system, I just wanted to give a quick thank you to the internal audit team. I appreciate everything they do to help get these audits through, and I just truly appreciate all they do, so thank you. So as I noted, today I'll be spending most of this time providing an update on the incident management system. I'm going to use the term hotline interchangeably just because saying incident management system over and over again is a bit tough. I'm going to highlight a few items on the briefing memo, definitely not read it, but before jumping in the details, I thought it might be helpful to the committee to discuss how submissions flow through, how they accumulate to be part of what is being presented in the data in the attachment. So what will happen is a party will submit a confidential report. They have the option to either call the 888 number, or there's two places on the NSHU website where they can submit their complaint or concern. And I know the email looks pretty long on the briefing memo, but you could also just Google Clearview, type in NSHE, Nevada System Higher Education, and it will come up that way too. There will be a notification sent that there's a new case, which by that I mean the party has submitted their concern. We have a variety of concerns that come through to us, everything from personnel concerns to financial aid discrepancies, which I will go into that a little bit later on if we're really the right place for those concerns. Internal audit assists by helping triage these submissions. When a new submission comes in, we have to review the case and determine who essentially would be the subject matter expert, who would be the best person to help follow up with this concern. We also have a spreadsheet which logs all of the cases. It contains things such as if it's open and closed, who we sent the case to, what kind of category it is, HR, financial, safety. We use this spreadsheet to track and the cases and trends to help create the charts that you see today. Each year, I try to spend a little bit of time during this item to try and clarify items that might be creating some confusion on what should and shouldn't be submitted here. So we are meant to be an additional resource. We won't be the all-inclusive everybody's cases. So what there is there will be cases that are being reviewed out at the institutions that we won't know about. They are handling those on their own. We are not meant to be collecting all of those as well as an all-inclusive hotline. We will always encourage a potential reporting party that if there are resources on campus to probably utilize those first. They usually have pretty good resources, and if they don't feel comfortable, then we are there as that additional resource. And in no way am I trying to deter anybody from coming to the NSHE hotline. I just wanted to mention that because sometimes there are better support resources at the institution. There have also been some situations where sometimes we'll get multiple submissions, whether it's all through the NSHE hotline or it might be some at the institution hotline and maybe some emails to others as well. I know it's hard to say to trust the process. I understand it's hard sometimes, but sometimes when there are multiple submissions in all those places, it does make it difficult to know who has done what and where your case is in the process of being reviewed. Something I realize also can be frustrating to some is that not all cases are going to result in NSHE internal audit performing their own audit or investigation. So as noted in the chart on page 3 of the attachment, you can see that the workplace conduct related cases remain a majority at 46%. Lots of times these are personal related concerns which are not within our purview, and we have to rely on those subject matter experts, think HR, Title IX, legal, to help review and resolve these concerns. Sometimes those will result in outside investigations, but not always. Another item to clarify, and just to reiterate, is we're not designed to override decisions made by the institutions. I guess an example I can think of is sending a assignment where you felt you should get an A-plus on it. I'm not here to override that instructor's grade on the assignment. This past year, I do feel like we have been getting an increased number of student-related concerns, which typically fall in that other category, which is why it's a little bit higher. Another category where we received a significant number of cases, it's environmental health and safety. This doesn't necessarily mean something's unsafe. We've had some cases over the past year where I have to categorize it that way. So something such as, I'm just kind of using high level, just general, like somebody looks suspicious in the student union. I've never seen them before, so I'd have to put that in this safety category. We also include some high-level trends and comparisons in the attached briefing memo. A few of other areas to highlight: during 2024, the volume of reports dipped a little bit. I do believe that's because we were going through the hotline transition where from an old vendor to a new vendor. We had an email in the meantime, but it's clear that people feel more comfortable submitting through a platform. The data for 2025 is through 9/30/25 on the memo, and as of today, we're actually at 77 cases for 2025, so that's close to our highest year at 80, with over a month left in the year. Another trend I wanted to point out in the benchmark report is anonymous reporting. So overall, since inception, 30% of reports filed have been anonymous. So we've typically been below the benchmark data and continue to be beneath the 2024 yearly rate of 54%. It's important to know that anonymous option exists because some people might not feel comfortable submitting something otherwise, unless there is that anonymous option. And then one more trend I wanted to discuss was the substantiation rate. So by substantiation, that means reports that when investigated prove to be correct or partially correct as reported, whereas unsubstantiated are reports that are investigated and proved to be inaccurate as reported or reports that cannot be proven to be true. So a high substantiation rate reflects well-informed individuals making high-quality reports coupled with effective investigation processes. As you can see on the chart four, our rate used to be closer to the benchmark, and now it's kind of dipped for the past 2 years. That rate doesn't include ongoing investigations, so I do expect that to change a little bit. So there's a few main reasons for this trend, which, once again, I'll keep this very high level because of confidentiality of these submissions. One reason is we've had an influx this year of concerns related to certain areas, so we're waiting for those investigations to play out. Another reason is we've had some individuals using this resource in a way that it's not designed to be used. And I know I have brought this up in the past, where we have to inform them that their concern's not within our purview. This isn't an ethics or compliance concern. This contributes greatly to the reporting percentage by category numbers, especially that environmental health and safety and the other being significantly higher than the benchmarks. So just to give an example, there are 62 cases for this report, and 14 were in the safety category, where 13 of them were from one individual that ended up being unsubstantiated. So I do believe the hotline is a good thing. It gives people a resource to come to. When it's being utilized appropriately, it's a great thing. That being said, we'll continue to promote the hotline for its intended purpose. Thank you.
And I will ask the committee if there's any general feedback and direction at this time that you feel like you would like to give before I go to the board. Okay, it appears to be none. This was an information item. We will now go to new business, and I do believe there, to me, I think there is some good new business items that I would like to ask as audit chair in regards to the questions that were asked of UNLV and of NSU. I'll just ask if there's kind of a feeling that within the next 3 months, because we have the rest of November and December is kind of a very busy family month, let's say, and then I don't know the agenda if there's going to be a meeting in January. Over the next 3 months, I would like to have the information that was asked today get back to the board from UNLV and from NSU. So those would be two agenda items, and if anybody wants to piggyback on that for anything more specific, be happy to do that. I think they know the questions, and they know what we're looking for. So to the two that are all three, anybody have anything more specific, this would be a great time to do it. Okay, any other new business from anyone in relationship to the subject matter that we're in? Seeing none, I thank the committee and the board and great questions. And within that next 3 month period, we will have items that will come forth to answer and address all the questions and concerns that came up in this meeting. We will now adjourn and then...
Last public comment
period. That's right. You know what? And I knew that. Thank you. I was thinking of our next meeting. Is there any... Let me go to that page so I can do it. Public comment at GBC. Thank you, Mr. Nielsen. At GBC, any public comment?
There is no public comment at this time.
Thank you. At the system office in Reno?
None at this time.
And I don't see anything or anyone at the podium in Las Vegas. SCS, anyone on the phone?
There is one caller on the phone. Caller with the phone number ending in 266, please press *6 to unmute. State and spell your name for the record, and you have 2 minutes to address the committee. They're not unmuting. There are no other callers, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you so much. We will adjourn this meeting and turn that over to Regent Brooks. Do you want a break for a couple? Oh, really? There will be a 15-minute break per Chair Brooks.